Absolutely.
Water, starting with trying to talk, we're going to talk about resource recovery update, and then we're also going to talk about the governance plan and what I'd like to do with the environmental quality, with the issue of environmental quality. So let's start with this project and with resource recovery update.
Good evening. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Fielding. I'm the Director of Plant Management. At our last gathering, I know we talked, Commissioner Badgerow presented part of our budget reductions which related to resource recovery, and I think, understandably, there was some concern surrounding that reduction as to what impact that might have on our ability to continue to provide resource recovery services at and above what we have historically done. The purpose this evening is to just take you through a couple of slides and hopefully convince you that things are well, things are actually getting better, and we believe we can absorb the reductions that were mentioned and still maintain the levels of service that we have provided. If you want to flip, if you would, came with a PowerPoint presentation, and obviously this setting doesn't lend itself, so we'll talk through the handout if we may. This first bar graph, I want to make a comment. Historically, we have measured our progress in resource recovery in terms of how much weight of waste we recycle, and that's certainly one way to measure it, and we've got a goal to do that. But, you know, in the final analysis, at the end of the day, if we could control things, we would drive disposed waste, that which we can't recycle, to zero. And we would recycle 100% of that waste which we cannot avoid. So this year, we've done more than just set the goal for recycling. We have also taken on a goal which says we're going to reduce disposed waste generated on the capital by an absolute amount over fiscal year 2008. And these two bars show you that we're making progress in both regards. Last year, and this covers the period July through February of the two fiscal years, 8 months. Last year, this time, we had recycled 55% of the total waste generated on the Capitol campus, about 1.9 million pounds. This year, total waste is up by 24 tons. However, the disposed waste is down by 43 tons, down by almost or a little over 10%. Recycled waste is up considerably, almost 13% by 67 tons. And as we get to the next slide, I'll explain what that increase in recycling is all about. But the point is the programs, which we'll talk about shortly here, that we have put in place to reduce disposed waste are beginning to show a solid result, which will continue throughout the year. If you want to go to the second bar chart, this is a reflection now of Capitol campus facilities year-over-year recycling volume. Actually, it's weight. And what you can see there is that there are really three principal buildings that are driving that increase that we saw on the first slide. Staffing being the largest, and in fact all of the increase that we've experienced in the first 8 months is the result of a dramatic increase in recycled waste coming from staffing. This is part of a continuing project that they have had now for several years to scan their files electronically, and once they're in, then they can dispose of the paper files. So this is not a project which will go on indefinitely, but it's certainly having a major impact on our performance this year.
Is there any way you guys could be picking out some best practices that you could be passing on to other agencies and so forth? in terms of what people get to do.
Representative Kahn, we...
It's shocked if you
see
white paper.
Well, I'll explain something, but let me jump, do a little fast forward. We did this last fall outreach initiatives in all of our buildings through all our key contacts to discuss exactly those kinds of things. In addition, and we haven't gotten to disposed waste yet, but we are also going to be undertaking a study, I guess it's can be considered a study, down at our disposed waste facility in Newport. We haven't done this since 1996, and what we do for a day, we take all of the disposed waste that's collected on the campus, we take it down there and we lay it out on the floor, and we literally go through it to determine the composition of that which is making it down to that facility as opposed to coming into the Resource Recovery Center. We'll do one day during session, and we'll do one day after session just to make sure that there isn't any large variation in that. And what we learn from those studies will help us figure out where we need to go target our efforts, the kinds of things that are finding their way into the waste stream, and the kinds of things that we need to do in order to take it out. To a smaller degree than staff, and the Capitol and the State Office Building are also up this year in the first 8 months, but I caution you not to read too much into that because given that the session began this year in January as opposed to February in last year, we've got really an extra month of operation here, an extra month of your business, an extra month of visitors and the waste that comes with their participation. So I think the real story here in terms of year-over-year increase in recycling is the staff and operation, and the rest of the buildings, you can see for yourself, are basically following traditional trends. Now, I worked long and hard on this one, and we may have to work long and hard to get everyone to understand what I spent all the time on. But here goes. Okay. The point of this scatter diagram is to try to help graphically show for each of our campus buildings whether they're making the right kinds of change with respect to both recycling and waste, disposed waste. It isn't necessarily a good thing if a building like Sasson, for example, increases its recycling waste if at the same time they're increasing their disposed waste. And that wouldn't be apparent just from the bar charts that we previously looked at. So with this chart, what I've tried to say is anything to the left of the y-axis, which would signify a reduction in reduced waste, is a good direction. And then depending upon whether it is an increase in recycling or a decrease, it may or may not be a good thing for us. Ideally, all of our buildings would be in the green area. And as you can see, the vast majority of them are. We have none in the red area. That's a good thing. We have a couple in this kind of Neverland triangular area there that's shown here in orange. But I think none of these are to the point of where we should have any reason for concern. I want to point out that the buildings that are shown in yellow are very important buildings to us because those buildings have cafeteria operations. And in July of last year, we undertook a contract now where the food waste from the cafeterias in those buildings is being collected and it is being recycled. It's hauled away 3 to 4 times a week to a facility where it is cooked, turned into feed pellets, and used in the hog farms. That has had a dramatic reduction. Probably half of the weight reduction in disposed waste that we've achieved so far has come from that initiative alone. And we just recently in February added the History Center cafeteria operation, which is the largest. It's a 7-day-a-week operation, the largest on campus. We just added that in February, and we just added Anderson. So I expect that by the time the fiscal year is over, we will see an even much larger increase in the reduction of disposed waste from the recycling of food waste.
Is there a Hasn't there been something in the news that some controversy about trying to expand this, and then that would stop the industry of feeding the pig farmers?
Representative Kahn, I'm not aware of that, no. I'll certainly ask.
Someone coming for a good contract, and that they would underbid, they would then underbid the facilities that are taking in and feeding it to pigs, like the farmers out of that place.
I'm not familiar with that, Representative. So hopefully I was clear. I hope this is helpful. We'll refine it. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to respond. I referred earlier to outreach. Last fall, our staff visited 19 buildings on the Capitol area, took a look at all of the collection containers, capabilities, the labeling of those containers, and working through our building contacts, conducted Q&A sessions with staff in order to ensure that there any questions they might have, any concerns they might have, were addressed. At that same time, we distributed over 2,000 of these posters that you see to the left. We distributed another 1,200 of the recycling boxes that are generally kept at individual desks, and we placed 80 new recycling containers out in the buildings. So we, as you may recall from Commissioner Badgerow's presentations, one of the ways that we're reducing our budget is that we're delaying the reprovisioning of containers. To a large degree, that's because we were already able to do this previously and will not have to do it for a while. Finally, I'd call your attention to the fact that we do have the resource recovery website. There's a lot of information on there and data about collection and facilities that goes well beyond what I'm able to cover here this evening. Finally, on the last page, I wanted to brief you on a couple of initiatives that we have underway. We have done some reciprocal site visits with the resource recovery operation over at the University of Minnesota, and we're looking for opportunities for shared services. There appears to be one very quickly that we can implement, the folks are putting the plan together now. Basically, what it would involve is that they do not have the capability in their operation to dispose of confidential documents, and consequently they contract with third parties, mobile third parties that come in and do that service. That's very, very expensive. We, on the other hand, collect glass, plastic, and cans. We have no way of recycling them. We pay a third party service to come and haul that away. They, however, the university, can process those. So what we will be doing here is, on a regular schedule, is once they fill up a vehicle with confidential paper, they'll bring it over here, we'll process it through our shredder, and we will get the value of the recycle from that paper. On the return trip, they haul our cans, plastic, and glass back to the university, and they process it at a rate of about $60 a ton for their recovery. So both sides win. And we're anxious to get started, and that really should be in place here in a matter of probably 60 days. I mentioned the disposed waste survey previously. That's really for the purpose of trying to get some better insight into what it is that's finding its way into the disposed waste stream. The last survey we did on that was 1996, so it's overdue. And then finally, the other source of disposed waste that is heaviest is the food, and secondary is the wet paper waste coming out of our restrooms. And so that's why you've seen here in the state office building in selected restrooms the Dyson hand dryers. There is now apparently a competing design from a company down in Illinois, World Dryer, which we're going to get a couple of those and test them, because they're quite a bit less expensive and would give us the ability to expand that rapidly In addition, in the administration building, we've just completed a test of converting from the individual C-fold brown paper towels, which always tend to come out in large groups when you remove them, and we've been testing roll paper towels, which reduce waste, and that's been a measurable improvement. So those two things will, once implemented, will give us further reductions in disposed waste. So that's just a quick overview, and I'm sure I haven't touched on everything. I hope I've given you a sense that we've got plans in place. We're making progress. We feel very good about the year ahead. Any questions? I'll be happy to take them.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's good to read about this, good to hear about it. We certainly worked hard over the years to respond to your ventures and to help get those state office building numbers up there. One of my questions, though, is on your white and pastel paper, mixed paper, and some of those things, and you mentioned you did a survey. One of my questions is on that survey, and it looks like relabeling here. These kind of been around for a while. Have you found them to be user-friendly? People understand? Do you have any results from your survey? Or did I change?
Representative Kipmer, I have to rely on Jeff Anderson, who is my expert and guru in this area. I know that there was a fair amount of work done in updating those labels because there were some changes to the law in terms of the types of things that they could and couldn't be recycled. In terms of any kind of formal feedback, I have none, but I'll certainly ask.
Another question, Madam Chair, okay. Is in regards to the high-speed hand dryers, I think we've had this paper or plastic. You know, is it more environmentally friendly to have the high-speed hand dryers do a better version of the roll paper towel? You know, it's kind of one of those things of which ones in the end. Yeah, there have been some studies on that one way or the other tends to be better.
Representative Connor, Representative Kipmer, I think what we have found, what all building operators have found through experience, is that there needs to be both. There are individuals who simply are not going to be persuaded to use one or the other. I think the drawback to hot air hand dryers in the past is they simply take too long. That's where these high-speed dryers come in. They're much faster. They're much more effective. If people are going to be inclined to use them, they'll be persuaded by these. But there are folks who just simply have to have paper. They feel they're more hygienic. In reality, if you go through the literature on the Dyson, arguably it is a much better application than paper. But this is a personal preference, and while I'd love nothing better for purposes of recycling than to take paper hand towels, whether they be roll or individual, out of the restrooms, I think we have to offer both. But we have to provide an alternative in the form of non-paper that is so compelling that we'll begin to change behaviors if we can.
Has anyone done an energy audit? Are those energy efficient devices?
Representative Kahn, they are. In fact, I think if the next time you're in one of those restrooms, we posted next to the unit, they are far more energy efficient than the standard hand dryer. For example, there is no hot air used to dry. It's purely air velocity that dries. They are, I think, 80% less in energy consumption than standard hand dryers. I mean, they have everything going for them.
I think in this building is only one on the first floor.
On the first floor, that's correct. Right. Centennial Office Building also has a couple.
Well, Madam Chair, I think my question was more one of which one is most environmentally friendly. You know, sometimes it seems counterintuitive because you think of paper, but we've all kind of learned that sometimes these machines are made, they're installed, and then you use electricity, and that in the end sometimes are you better off with just a simple, well-running paper towel, or is it, because I'll use whichever one is most environmentally concern me, because I'll learn to adapt myself to whichever one will get the garbage.
Representative Kipmer, I don't...
Walk down to the first floor and use the high.
I have.
I don't have the information. I think I can get some better information for you, but I can tell you this. If you think through the process of what it takes to produce paper hand towels, whether they be rolls or individual C-folds, to produce them, to ship them, to store them, to handle them, to install them, to remove them once used, to recycle them. I mean, the amount of energy and the amount of labor that goes into that process versus a one-time manufacturer on a piece of equipment that is very low use in energy, it would be hard for me to believe that the numbers would be in any way supportive of paper.
Madam Chair, thank you. That was the answer I was looking for. And I think there are those, you're right, that sometimes no matter what, they'll do the paper towel thing, and I appreciate that. But I think there's a whole bunch of others who, just knowing that indeed it is, from the perspective that you just explained, I will be glad to use whichever Dyson or whoever called that will do a better job of that, because you're right. But they do need to be, they need to work well, or people just give up and grab a paper towel. Now you have both.
Representative Kipmer, knock on wood, since we put those in, we've not had one service call on them.
Okay. All right. Any other questions on... Oh, and then the issue of... I guess Commissioner Fedro said something about that how badly the mixed paper...
Oh, pricing.
Pricing has gone down, and that the white paper isn't too bad. What was it?
Representative Kahn, to show you how volatile this is, I just got an update this morning on that, and since we met last week, the recycled value of mixed paper went from $1.25 to $6.25. However, recognize that in July of last year it was $41. So it's all over the map. White paper right now is at $140 a ton, and it was
$245. Can you give us those numbers?
Absolutely.
I mean, they buy the paper back. They buy it back?
Representative, yes. We sell, once sorted and baled, it is sold back on a tonnage basis.
Okay, any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Now let's go to the governor's plan for the Environmental Quality Board. Members, there are two things you have in your packet. You have the from the governor's bill, Article 3, the transfer of the Environmental Quality Board. And you have a bill I just put in, which is obviously only for consideration, for the establishing the position of chief environmental officer. And we're not taking action on this one. We're just putting them out for mainly to hear the explanation of the governor.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tim Schirkenbach. I'm Deputy Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency, and Sheila Rieger is here, Deputy Commissioner of Department of Administration. I can start it off, and I've had a little handout here, a picture that I think maybe is as easy as anything, just to kind of explain what the proposal is. And again, the idea is right now there are four people, staff, that are over at the Department of Administration that are staff for the Environmental Quality Board. There are two of those basically work on environmental review issues, and a large part of that, about half of the environmental review, is really done by local governments. They're the RGUs for environmental assessments and that type of thing, and then the others are done by state governments, so they serve a purpose also to help also with technical assistance and advice on that. And actually right now they're working on some phase two of some work on the environmental rules themselves, so part of it is based on rulemaking and providing policy and guidance. The other two are of the staff over administration right now, are involved in the role of EQB relative to a large part of the water planning, but also as far as environmental policy for the state, doing various reports, helping to coordinate the work of other agencies. Then, of course, there's the Environmental Quality Board, 15 members. Basically, it's about 9, 10 are commissioners of agencies or head of agencies, like the Office of, or the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and then there are 5 citizen members of that. The approach right now, and there has been some work done lately as far as an effort even of the Environmental Quality Board to look at a refocus of EQB. I think there's been some concerns of how to reinvigorate the EQB as far as a broader role beyond just the environmental review function. And as a result of that, there were different options laid out by kind of a sub-team that looked at it, and some of those dealt with, I think, 3 of the options they laid out were to do nothing. The other one was looking at maybe one of the agencies that already exists taking over as kind of a lead role with that. And the third one went to the idea of, again, the governor appointing somebody as head of the EQB and it being assigned or directly out of the governor's office, so there was more of an executive branch lead on the role of EQB. Lately, as far as some additional discussions, finally it was decided to come up with a proposal that I'm here to talk about today, and really the idea is kind of focusing on that center or the second option I mentioned. And the idea would be to basically, as of July 1, 2009, move the 4 staff from EQB over to the PCA. However, there's actually a change item there as far as the reductions that Department of Administration has looked for in order to meet with the fiscal crisis that we have. Actually, they've already taken, I think, of 1.5 of those positions, about $150,000, and reduced that. So really what we'd be getting is 4 people, 2.5 positions. What we would do then is look at how we would find other positions in the agency with some of the vacancies we're managing, so the people we take and make use of the skills that they have. And one of the ideas of this is to hold those staff harmless, concerned that they've got a lot of experience, they've built up a lot of expertise on environmental issues, and so we'd try to figure out and how, if they wanted to continue working at our agency, we would find other spots. And again, with their expertise in some of the planning functions and others, we think that would fit in with our work that we're doing. The second thing is the, and you see here in step 2, would be by January 15, 2010, we would come up with a report to the legislature. And that report to the legislature would talk about the implications of step 3, which would be the idea of actually replacing EQB by the agency board. Right now, PCA, Pollution Control Agency, has a 9-member citizen board. Headed up, the chair of that board is the commissioner of the PCA. But then there are 8 other citizen members. And again, that's a very public board. I think all of you probably or hope have heard of some of the different decisions that that board has dealt with over the years. The idea would be we'd do this report in January, and we'd look at several different issues is the idea. And one of the issues is, again, that idea of what it would mean to replace the EQB as it now exists with the citizens board, and how we can make sure that the idea of accessibility, openness, and policy making that now exists through the board as it presently is would be adequately addressed by the 9-member citizen board. Another issue would be we'd look at how we would deal with coordination of activities of the agency. Because you have a number of state agencies as a part of EQB, it automatically serves as a way of kind of coordinating the functions of those. Because certainly you have other agencies such as the Department of Agriculture, Department of Health, Department of Natural Resources, Board of Water and Soil Resources, even Department of Transportation that have activities that involve environmental issues. So again, the board serves as a way to keep those other agencies aware of and coordinated in environmental activities. Another thing would be to deal with the objective of separating. The idea being if the separating the agency's role as both coordinator of EQB with our role as regulator. And again, this is something we would talk about how we would do that as far as separating those functions. This is something that's not new to us. Even as the Environmental Office of Environmental Assistance was moved over to the PCA in 2006, this was an issue at that time. People were concerned, how do you separate the assistance role from the regulatory role? And we think we've dealt with that in a very effective way by the way we've kind of kept staff, different groups, and built in our management structure a nice tension between the division directors of the different types of divisions that we have in our agency. We'd also look at how we could freshen up, and one of the things we'd look at, there's a lot of Environmental Quality Board statutes that have existed over a long long length of time. And one of the things that we've tried to do is look at those and say, which one of those need to be kind of finally dropped or deleted, and which of those should be kind of updated in some way. So there's been things that have been added over the years, and I think part of this is understanding what reports have been done, what additional reports need to be done, and make some type of recommendation on how to do that so we could make sure we're focusing the ECB time on the things that need to get done. And also the key thing we'd look at is this idea of how to provide accessibility to the public. And that's something we think that our Citizens Board is very good at. It's very, again, one of the few agencies in state government that actually has a Citizens Board that deals with specific issues. They deal with permits. They deal with environmental review issues. They deal with our rule changes, so that those have to come to them. So they provide for people that once in a while are concerned with the bureaucracy. It provides people a direct link to come in front of the citizens and raise issues and ask questions. So we'd also figure out how we could continue to do that with the broader role of the agency expanded because of the EQB role and responsibilities. So what we do is do that report, have that done by January 15th, so it'd be coming in for the next legislative session. And then the idea would be finally, though, by July 1st, 2010, actually to replace the EQB. That would be abolished, and we would now have the PCA Citizens Board take the role of EQB board over. So that is the proposal. There's been concerns expressed about this idea of why had that abolishing the EQB happen, and I guess one of the ideas was just to make sure that there was pressure to have the issue focused on and finally get something done, because there's been a concern, I think, that the staff have been over at administration and they haven't really been around or working with other people that are dealing with environmental issues. And also the idea on this would be that with EQB, certainly there's going to be good discussion between this year and next year, but at least have some proposal out there to finally kind of reinvigorate the EQB as far as what it does and how it does it. So that's the proposal that is being offered or proposed by the governor at this time.
Thank you. I have a number of questions here, and in the interest of full disclosure, I have a constituent who's on the EQB, Sue McCarville, but she's distressed over this proposal for obvious reasons. But even apart from her concern, I'm trying to figure out what I'm hearing you say is that the staff, the now reduced staff, is going to be moved over there. So that answers one of my questions, which is this a money-driven decision, or was it sort of an org chart-driven decision? I don't see any financial savings here, unless I'm missing something. Are there financial savings? Are there dollar savings, or is it just an org chart?
I think there's some, Madam Chair, Representative, there's some dollar savings, but to be honest, maybe I could let Sheila talk of that, and then I could get to the other things that I think are driving the decision. Yep.
Madam Chair, members, I just have a couple comments. More from
your name and
excuse me. I'm Sheila Rieger, Deputy Commissioner at Admin. I just have a couple operational comments that might answer some of the questions if now is a good time. Since 2002, Admin has taken a 35% reduction in budget over those many years, and necessarily much of that, or some of that, has happened from the old planning functions. And here's another example of that coming up. This year, most agencies are looking at about a 5% reduction, and Admin's target is 7%. So this action, of course, caused us to really take a look at where can we make those cuts within Admin. And in some discussions with PCA, we are able to look for a $306,000 reduction by the elimination of 1.5 FTEs over the biennium. And that can happen by this transfer
of ETB over to PCA. If the proposal is adopted, the efficiencies that will come with that transfer will allow the ETB staff to stay on board without any layoffs, and basically because PCA says they can absorb them with some of their existing positions. As you know, admin comes before this legislative committee, which doesn't really have environmental concerns as the primary mission, even though I know members have lots of interest in the cause. But likewise, admin doesn't have as our primary mission the promotion of environmental causes, even though we have a concern and interest in that as well. Admin exists to provide administrative and management support services to other agencies and local units of government. So this management of ETB is a little bit out of our forte, so to speak. The budget cuts and removal of the energy facility siting piece, which happened, I think, 2 bienniums ago, which that happened to be another source of income for this unit, really has resulted in a starving of the ETB function. Moving the ETB over to PCA will provide them a greater opportunity to flourish, a better opportunity to perhaps gain resources that they need. We know that this committee and others often have a negative target. It's very difficult to seek new funding for environmental kinds of needs, going to an administrative committee in particular. And then the ETB staff really has, as Tim said, four members. Three of them are very near to retirement, or I believe are certainly eligible to retire. And one of my jobs is to take a look at workforce planning and how are we going to make sure that there's continuity there. And boy, within admin, we don't have a complement of environmental-related people to really take a look at starting to do some of that succession planning. So this is one way to take a look at how can we capture the information that these people have acquired over the many years and transfer that on. So just basically in summary, there's a few important pieces that would happen operationally if this unit moves over. There's operational efficiencies and there's some reduction in duplication of effort. It allows a cut in the budget of $306,000 over the biennium. It positions ETB to better plan for upcoming retirement and the continuity of service. And it also would position ETB into an agency with an environmental mission and improved access to the resources that they need. And that basically concludes the comments from an operational point of view. And I hope that answered your question.
Well, Madam Chair, not exactly. I still have a question. You just mentioned $306,000 in savings. Is that a net savings for state government, or is that just the $306,000 off the books of the Department of Admin?
Madam Chair, it is a savings for admin over the biennium.
Okay. I mean, and that's fine. And there may be, and this is where I want to go next. So what I'm hearing is, at least in the short term, and I know these folks are nearing retirement, so what will be in the future and in the next year or two or three or five, whether or not those positions are replaced once they retire, if they retire. But let's talk then about the, so I guess in the short run, I'm seeing that there's no net savings off for the state. It's off of admin books, that's $306,000 of admin, but they just go onto the books of another agency. But so let's talk about the org chart reasons then.
Madam Chair, if I can just correct that.
Sure, unless I'm wrong.
It is a reduction to admin's budget, but there one and a half FTEs is being cut, and that money comes back to this committee.
Okay. Right. So not all the FTEs are going over. The people are, but the FTEs are. That's fair. In terms of just the org chart rationale for all of this, this is going back to debates before my time, but I understand from you, Madam Chair, that there was a reason originally, and I don't pretend to understand all of it, but maybe you or others could tell us about that. There was a reason why this Environmental Quality Board was intentionally not placed in PCA and other places, and there was a reason for that separation. I'm interested in that, and I'm not making up my mind one way or another whether it's good or bad, but I'm interested in why that was done in the first place.
Okay.
I think the reason is that environmental issues have a lot more than just environment aspects to contend with. For example, there are health issues that are related to that. And the idea, for example, when you have DNR and PCA and water resources and so forth, DOT, that all of those things, that if you put the EQB into one agency, it shifts its focus from being a generalist in terms of the environmental quality of all of these things going together. And I'm still, I'm not convinced that that argument does not hold. Just so, as soon as you say, you go into an agency that's prime focus is environment, and that's great. Well, that's the problem, is that that takes away this overarching focus that EQB had. And this whole concept, I mean, when you look at this chart on this paper, this concept of you do the whole transfer, then you make a report and recommendation on the transfer to the legislature, and then it kind of really happens, doesn't make a lot of sense to me as a method of doing things. And the idea that you have to focus on it before it happens, I mean, we could focus on it by just abolishing the PCA or something, and that would get people's minds really focused on what's going to happen.
Actually, Madam Chair, there is a bill over in the Senate to abolish DNR, PCA, Board of Water and Soil Resources, and the other, and that makes it so interesting. There's all kinds of different proposals. If I could just take a little bit of shot at the representative's question. Basically, if you look, the environmental issues in the country actually are driven by major federal laws. Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, Superfund Law, RCRA, Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, all those different ones. The environmental agency in the state is the Pollution Control Agency. That's the one that deals with it. I understand what the Madam Chair, and I guess fully understand, looking back at some of the thoughts on the development of EQB here, which was basically going off of the federal model. So different states came up with their kind of little state model of the Environmental Policy Act and dealing with it. In fact, at the federal level, there was a Council of Environmental Quality, and I think one of the models in talking to people like Chuck Dayton, who was one of the people back when this all originally happened, and I actually have been in state government and the environment since 1972, actually back then the idea was coming up with the Council of Environmental Quality model, which really had three highly kind of technical professional people that would develop a board that would help look at broader environmental quality issues that went beyond the kind of the first baby steps were taken under the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act. What happened, unfortunately, I think, is, and even Chuck Dayton and others have talked about this, they ended up with a compromise model that I don't know if anybody was happy with, because then what they said is, they first said, let's have these citizens, and then what they did is, no, the state agencies wanted to make sure that nothing would happen that would impact them, so it's kind of a compromise, the way I understand it. They ended up with these 10 different agencies on there. It's a nice model, and when you hear about it and talking about, then it makes sure their interest is involved. And the ideal, it sounds great. The reality is, if you look at the attendance and you look at the agenda for the Environmental Quality Board, most of the commissioners aren't there. That's not good or bad, anything about them. That's not their main focus on dealing with these type of issues. Their main focus, their urgent issues, are going to be elsewhere on dealing with it. And as a state agency, if we were the ones that now were at the kind of staffing that, we would have to make sure we talk to those other agencies, and we do every day anyway, on all kinds of issues. I have issues as deputy right now with all those health departments, Department of Ag, DNR, Board of Water and Soil Resources, Department of Transportation, all of them. Commerce, I have meetings with all of them within probably the last 3 weeks on some type of issues. So they're already there, so they would have to be involved. And number two, you're seeing right now with what happened was stripping away part of the EQB that dealt with power plants and power lines. Basically, again, what's happened, you have kind of this open staff over administration. And if you look at EQB's major role under the statutes now, here's the type of thing. Coordinate agencies and programs that affect the environment. To think that four people can do it from administration when they're not around people that are working on environmental issues and whatever else, I just think it sets them up for failure. The other issue, study environmental issues. Our agency has reports that come out on everything throughout the year. we're studying on all these issues all the time anyway. So we have to be up to speed. We have to be involved in national organizations on dealing with that. And you even have this idea of convening environmental congresses. That's something that's going way back, and it hasn't happened under this EPUB because nobody's finally been interested in setting an environmental agenda for the state and dealing with that. And so I think finally, if you get the state agency that's tied into all the federal issues on the environment, it finally reinvigorates and gets the focus and gets the expertise that's already at our staff, helping to build the horsepower of an EQB so it can look at those. Plus, it still had a citizens board where we have as much input from the public as I think any other agency has because of that citizens board and the opportunity to come down there monthly and ask to be heard on a variety of issues. So that's where I think is the structural level.
Go ahead.
Let's get to finish up Steve and then go to Sandy.
Sure. Yeah, I just closely related with that. So we have the citizen component of the EQB right now. It looks like step three of this would have a citizen component in the new configuration. Actually a bigger one, if I'm understanding you correctly, more citizens. I have to put in the shameless plug for my constituent. Any chance that the citizens on the current EQB could leapfrog over to the new citizen panel?
I don't think that's out of the question. In fact, right now, we have Paige Weinberger, who used to be on EQB, who asked to come over to the PCA because she understood that the EQB really wasn't. She was frustrated with being on EQB and seeing what it was really focused on and dealing with, and finally understood that our Citizens Board was involved in a lot more issues.
Thank
but
you.
At some point in time, it's probably good to hear directly from her on her understanding of why she did that.
Representative,
and Chair, I have a question. Are we going to have somebody from the EQB staff or board address us? Because that might be helpful. And
Madam Chair, yeah, I mean, Gene Hugesson is now chair, and actually this was a discussion, this was the focus of discussion at last Thursday's EQB meeting, this idea, so that we could hear from it, and certainly your constituent representative had some opinions on that at that time.
And has no one on the EQB has raised this issue of that there's some idea of having all the agencies combined with environmental issues at a neutral site instead of in one of the agencies that's a member of the board, that's been a part of the board.
Actually,
and EQB cares about that, or staff.
Madam Chair, probably it'd be good. I think John Bloomberg, one of the citizen members, raised that as one of the issues. I think he raised also more the issue of what I describe as how can the agency that would be the in the central role of establishing environmental rules, environmental review rules, be the same ones that then would implement those. And so that was, I think, more his question than it was this other idea. I think the reality is that the citizen members, but again, probably it's fairest to have them right here, understand that the participation of the other commissioners has been dwindling over the years. It just hasn't been their major focus. They're going to spend their time on the issues that are key and in front of their agencies. So.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. First, just a process question. Does this bill, or does this change in the governor's bill and or your bill, does that actually come to our committee for decision-making, or is this informational?
Well, mine, I guess, is informational at this point.
Okay.
It's obviously going to environmental policy, which has tomorrow, or something, tomorrow and Friday left for it. This is in the governor's bill. This is in the bill that I've introduced, the governor's bill.
Thank you, ma'am. So for this committee, we would ultimately be voting on that.
This language is in it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
It's kind of weird the way it's written because it has, I get to recognize all kinds of things that I put in for certain purposes that are now totally obsolete. Nobody's taken them out. They just left them in there and I don't understand what the reason for that is. Things done to, unfortunately when I lose something, just a big building spitting smoke into the environment on my regular running route, so I get to see it every day at the University of Minnesota steam plant. Mm-hmm. And then the other one that's in here is the metal crushing condorator in Abby Campion District.
Yeah, just a question to testify.
Yes.
Thank you. And
I don't know why this wasn't more appropriately written to get rid of things that don't have any relevance anymore.
And Madam Chair, that one of the ideas of the study is to go in and clean things out like that. So it is current, at least there's a discussion on what would be suggested for deletion.
Okay. Good, Madam Chair. Having actually participated on a similar board, I won't name it because I'm going to actually criticize it, but I found it to be much like what you described, I think, for the EQB, and that's where well-intentioned and extremely experienced and professional people in the field meeting quarterly or even monthly struggle immensely to keep pace with what's happening within the agency and within federal governments. I mean, it is just impossible, and you end up being a little bit of a bystander, and you have interesting meetings and possibly even good discussions, but the efficacy of the group, I think, is just severely compromised. So if what you're describing on the EQB and staff side is similar to what I experienced on that other board, I would very much support this. So can you just give a quick description of the frequency of the board meetings, typical agenda, and maybe what staff is doing to support them, and any actual real decision making that is conducted by the board? I don't need the full-blown description, but just a very quick one.
And Madam Chair, Representative, are you talking about the present Environmental Quality Board? Or
present.
Present board has not been meeting on a regular basis, and in fact, what they've decided is to go to a quarterly basis now because of the types of decisions. And I have not been that involved in the meetings. I think the most recent things they focused on was on the idea of some of the authorization of the rulemaking that is now underway, so that they understood and authorized they have to do that as it goes into rulemaking. And that's about all I can remember. And some of the strategic planning. Once in a while, yes, Madam Chair, I apologize. Sometimes a few of the reports that are being done, they will bring the draft report to the EQB so that they can take a look at it before it goes out in final. And again, under the responsibilities of EQB now, again, there's different reports that need to be made to the legislature, and so those are the type of things that are also reviewed.
What about their report on water sustainability?
Madam Chair, actually that was reviewed by them, but that was requested by the Pollution Control Agency because of the idea of all our work in ethanol plants. So finally our citizens board felt that they should better understand, rather than dealing with each one of those as they were dealing with both the environmental assessment and the permits, what they'd rather do is have kind of a report by the EQB staff. So our staff work with the EQB staff to come up with the water sustainability study.
Well, that's kind of an example of where you have the sense that if only PCA staff is doing that, when you've been responsible for everything that's gone up to that, there isn't really any even ability for some independent oversight.
And that, Madam Chair, I guess that's where you have a citizens board that's there where we have to go out and public notice that the issue is going to be there. And in fact, what we then had is representatives from the other agencies that were involved in that report were at the meeting and then could ask to testify. I mean, anybody can testify at our meetings, and I can tell you that we have people from other agencies and often have environmental groups testify. MCEA, Minnesota Environmental Partnership, all those groups are very active at our hearings and show up and understand and pay attention to the agendas that we send out.
Madam Chair, the gentleman from the Pollution Control. This is the first time on this committee, so I have a lot of learning to do. Can you give me an overview of what specifically your agency is supposed to be doing as far as goals, and then do you have a measurement that I can tell how well you've been meeting your goals?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, very good question. We, even as we lay out our strategic plan, the three core elements are our programs that are relative to air programs, clean air in the state, and that really is our delegation of all the responsibilities that come under the Clean Air Act that goes all the way back to 1970. Then we have the water programs, and again, land of 10,000 lakes, not hard to understand. It's not only our agency and other agencies, but we're responsible for clean water and the water quality rules, and now the implementation of this whole impaired waters program that deals with the idea of assessing where the waters are impaired in the state. Then the idea of developing plans for addressing how to deal with those impairments, and then actually working with local governments to implement the remediation needed to do that. And then what we have, what we cover under a whole area called land programs that relate to clean land, clean groundwater, and all that that relate to, we have remediation programs, we have, and that's our Superfund program, our closed landfill program, our petroleum remediation programs. I'm dealing with spill or leaked fuel oil from fuel oil tanks, and that we have our emergency response programs. We have the solid waste program where we deal with solid waste landfills. There's about 283 different types of landfills or land disposal facilities in the state. And then we deal with things such as hazardous waste or prevention programs, where we deal with cradle to grave regulation of hazardous waste as it's generated in the state. I'm dealing with that. Now, as the Office of Environmental Assistance has come across, we're also dealing with a lot of programs that go to product stewardship and go to elements of conservation, energy conservation, and greenhouse gas regulation and dealing with that. So a variety, and right now I think our staff is 900 and about 950 staff that we have. And again, about some of our money, and it's interesting to see, back in the mid-80s, about half of our money came from the federal government, and half of our money came from general fund. At the present time, we have about 12% of our money comes from the federal government. About 6 to 8% comes from general fund, and then the rest comes from a variety of different fees and revenues such as that.
Madam Chair, again, okay, so basically, you've already stated that you're basically a regulator and you're dealing with these with various programs, period.
Madam Chair, but actually not basically a regulator anymore. Now, more and more, as we're dealing with the idea of so much of the pollution covering from non-point source type of things, in other words, stormwater runoff and other things, it's not really regulatory as such. It's more and more is providing technical assistance and all kinds of best management practice and other things. So it's really become a integrated program where we have a number of different, as we call it, different types of tools. And we try to figure out, given the situation, what's the best mix of tools to try to accomplish the outcomes. And actually, in our strategic plan, we have a whole variety of different outcomes and then measures that we deal with on a quarterly basis that we monitor, report on, and track. In all those different areas, some of them come even down from the federal government and the whole federal system of reporting on performance and result measures, and then a lot of them are additional ones we've developed for the state. And a lot of those, especially in the water area now, are part of a partnership. So with the whole Clean Water Legacy Act and the money that now we get for dealing with impaired waters, there's certainly a whole partnership between the Department of Agriculture, Department of Natural Resources, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and the PCA, then to work with local government to deliver the water programs throughout the 81 watersheds in the state.
Okay.
How much, well, my sense, and that's why the reason I've written this bill, which I'm not quite sure where it gets to go, is that, you know, PCA has done, known each other for a very long time. We've worked together on the same side.
Yeah, well, we respect,
size
I respect
of,
you very much, Madam Chair.
Side of most things, but the concept that we take the whole idea of generally thinking about it, about the environment, and putting it into, you know, a major regulatory agency that has and you did a very good analysis of all the things that you do. That bothers me that somehow we're losing some broader thinking on it. And I think the reason why we put such things in the Department of Administration or in the Office of Strategic Planning and so forth is because we wanted to get a broader thought on it, and we wanted to have a platform where all the commissioners or all, and I understand the same commissioners, like this be a euphemism, but people concerned about the different little aspects of these elements would all get together and, you know, on neutral turf, so to speak, and just not subsist thinking about the environment into one regulatory agency, competent as that may be. So I don't know what, Sandy, I know you have a bill that we need to bring into the conversation too, which reorganizes the Office of Strategic Planning and so forth, and I don't know how it's all going to fit into everything we're doing and all the budget cutting that we're doing, but I'm not sure that this is the time to give up the idea that we're going to look at paint some things with a broader brush.
Yes, Madam Chair, whoever would like to answer. I really have a problem with EQB going to the Police and Control Agency. Department of Natural Resources, I mean, I guess my thought,
yes,
they at least have a broader concept, at least in my opinion. Was that ever considered?
Madam Chair, I think there, yeah, in the discussions that was considered. I think, you know, actually maybe it's understanding the mission of DNR is broader. It's different. You have the whole natural resource protection side, and then you have the environmental protection side. And, you know, and first, it's hard to say there are no bright lines between those. Finally, you look at it, and let's be honest. Other states, you go to Wisconsin, you go across to Michigan, they have their Department of Natural Resources, and then they have different bureaus. So you bring it all together, and then you kind of break it into your different bureaus, and you have certain parts of those that deal directly or much more with the federal government because of all the federal environmental laws, and then you have the others that deal with the Department of Interior and other things that are more natural resource related. So, you know, no matter where you go, you always have that thing. You divide it up, it's like a Rubik's Cube. Every time you turn and get all the colors on one face line up, then they're not lined up in the other. So it's just which you're saying is your major focus. And I can't respect the chair very much. And again, just reasonable people are going to have differences of opinion on this. There's not a right answer. This was the idea of reinvigorating and dealing with the reality of how things are working and really getting a focus again. And I think actually if the PCA were the one, like the Environmental Congress, I think that's something myself in all these years we should be having on a periodic basis, a way of getting together and talking about what we've accomplished, where do we want to go, setting an agenda for the state. In tough times, admitting we need some priorities. We can't promise everybody everything. What are our priorities? How are we going to go about doing that? The reality is if it's PCA, DNR, whatever, you're still going to have to work with the other agencies. You're still going to have to work with local government. So part of this is about just having people that are wise enough and smart enough that they can figure out how to bring people together and get that type of thing done. The chair has offered before. There was this idea that this would happen out of the governor's office. And I've got to be careful here, but because I've been around 37 years, I can say I've worked with every governor's office going back to Wendell Anderson and that. And it's all great. You'd think an environmental, you'd have somebody right in the governor's office. But there's so many other things that always are there that it's just hard for them to really stay up on the issues and really understand all the things that happen. So you've got to find somebody down in the agencies that day-to-day, that's their job. That my agenda, my schedule includes all these meetings I've got to be taking care of. And so at least that's there. So probably enough said.
Okay. Anyone else have any last comments on this? Right now, it might be a 3-2 vote. I don't think we're going to take it.
Oh, are you planning to vote on it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't think so. But
thank
I'd like
you.
To,
I,
you know, I certainly
feeling.
Understand about the issues of where the work has to be done, but I'm just very reluctant to give up a broad view of the whole issue of environmental regulation. You know, I'm not going to try and think it now. So I'm urging at least everyone who's still here to think about, is there something we could do that would, you know, use the talent properly of all the agencies, but not like, because I think once we do this, it's done. And I don't think environmental quality will ever have any issue other than EPA's direction. And this is the direction that we could go. So, okay.
Just appreciate it. Thank you for a very open and fair discussion,
okay.
Madam Chair. That's
okay.
Good. This deserves that.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.